Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
Hello, welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. My name's Andy Moss and I'm one of the programme co-leads for the Armed Forces Community Programme. We're focused on several different areas within our strategy. First of all, veterans. We focus on families, we focus on support and signposting, we focus on events and we focus on business, but we also focus on the service lever. And I'm delighted to welcome today Tim Jones, who leads our service lever pillar. Good morning, Tim.
Morning.
Can we start just by you telling us a little bit about who you are?
So, probably going back a good few decades now, I was born and brought up in the South Yorkshire region. I have very much interested in joining the military from a very young age and started on the path looking to join as a soldier. When I went up to the Army Careers Information Office in Sheffield, they determined that from the results that I scored within the aptitude test and then talking to my headmaster at the time, they very much prompted me and pushed me to go for a commission, which in the first instance I wasn't bothered about. However, after a few conversations, I got put on a track to go for both a scholarship, sixth form scholarship with the military, and then also to go to Welbeck College, and subsequently went to Welbeck College. Went to Sandhurst after that, commissioned into the Royal Corps of Signals in 1985, and served 11 years with the Corps. Did some great postings, but I took to heart the motto of Sandhurst, which is serve to lead, and very much believed that it was beholden upon me as a commissioned officer to look after the guys and girls with whom I served. I left through miscommunication, I tell people, when I left the military, typical for the Royal Corps of Signals, bumped into a person from Siemens Plessy who we'd provided a number of individuals for manpower for their exhibitions, usually came from the Sick, Lame and Lazy platoon. But they he asked me what I was doing, and I said I was leaving because I was posted up to Harrogate. And he said, okay, great, send us your CV, we're interested. So that was my departure from the Corps. And I've really been in communications, predominantly in the sales and business development environment in senior positions since.
Thanks, Tim. So you left the Army, went and worked in the comms space, but you also do quite a lot of work with service leavers. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, so at the time, back in the late 90s, there was an organisation set up by the brilliant Mike Nicholson called Gunners in Business. And it was an offering supporting people leaving the armed forces, predominantly going into finance roles within the city. It's expanded the capability now and is now called the List and the Liquid List. So it's a great networking environment. And it was at a time in the communications industry where we were seeing the move over to data, the development and growth of the internet, voice data convergence, and a number of other buzzwords within the communication space that mean a lot to communicators, but not a great deal to other people. And we just saw that there was this major opportunity to support people leaving predominantly the Royal Corps of Signals in better understanding the employment environment. And we very imaginatively called it a Jimmy in business, Jimmy Catbadger of the Royal Corps of Signals. It was a phenomenal environment of support. And myself and my co-founder, Ian, we had regular networking events in London. And then quite often we'd have dinner nights where we would have it sponsored by a big business that was looking to recruit from the military environment, recognizing, and at the time there was a campaign called Access to Excellence run by the MOD, which was part of the support environment, and I use the term loosely, that supported employers in accessing. And we've seen the development since of the Career Transition Partnership, which was contracted in 1998, the build out of the Defence Relationship Management, the drive out of the Armed Forces Covenant, etc. But in those very early days, people didn't really know how to access the talent pool that was leaving the military. As we set that organisation up, we very quickly recognised things that have been seen in the research, borne out by the research subsequently. So people leaving the military get statutory support around employment. It's time limited, and it's only for the uniformed individual. And as you were talking with Sue Knight, you know, that there's a family very often supporting the serving person that doesn't have access to that statutory support. But equally, it's not just about employment. It's about where do you find a doctor? Which schools do your kids go to? How do you create a decision tree when you've been in a very well-provisioned environment? How do you create a decision tree as to where you're going to live? Is it going to be close to the schools, close to the interests that your kids have? Is it going to be close to the work you want to do, close to the work that, or are you going to be surrounded by family? And a lot of people struggle with that. There's a major issue around culture shock. You know, the civilian work environment is very different from the military. Even, you know, people I speak to these days, as we've continued the support, there's a major culture shock. But it's finding doctors, dentists. It's understanding pathways into the health environment, particularly for people that are carrying a service-related injury or illness. So the networking of the group, we learned a lot of great lessons. And it's reiterated. It got called X Forces Net for a while. But I've been providing transition support and navigating people. I've written over 6,500 CVs, supported people in understanding pathways into employment, but equally guided people into where support can be best achieved.
Tim, that's amazing. And while I was sitting watching you talk there, I can see the passion. It obviously means a lot to you. So you're leading our service leaver pillar. So that is people that are leaving the armed forces. And you're doing that for the Shaping Forces team. Can you tell us why that matters to you personally?
It matters to me personally, Andy, because there's a major disconnect. People join the armed forces for various reasons, seeking adventure, seeking a challenge, the excitement, you know, the challenge, the operational environment, but the chance to see the world, the chance to go to different countries, to learn skills and build out social mobility predominantly. When they come to the end of their service, they've got a vernacular, an entire language pool, a large language model that in no way crosses over with the civilian environment. And so they find it difficult to articulate that they understand and see in a term that a civilian hiring manager might understand. This is then further complicated that within the military, you are surrounded by like individuals, people with a sense of purpose, a mission, that are well presented, that are decision makers, problem solvers, mentally and physically resilient predominantly. But because you are in a pool of like individuals, you do not see those as differentiators to articulate those hidden skills, soft skills, hard skills that you then bring to the civilian employment workplace. And so, you know, as Ben Reed from Redeployable talks about, and many other organizations like Job Oppo, Gareth Williams and James Roberts at Job Oppo talk about, we see veterans, because they are unable to articulate this fantastic skill set that they have, the multiple skill set that they have, they become underemployed within civilian life. And when they go for a job, it's a consideration that they are purely, it's transactional. They are transacting their time to deliver their value. But they are not challenged. There isn't a great sense of purpose or mission within a lot of businesses. So they don't get behind it. It becomes a very transactional environment. And so people don't get fulfilled a lot of the time. So I'm incredibly passionate about supporting people understanding in how to articulate, understanding their real value, and then how they go about finding a job that suits them within the civilian world, because that for me is about the value exchange. It's not just about getting great jobs for service leavers and their families. It's very much about them delivering their value to their employer to be promoted and developed within that organization. But equally, the more people that are better employed, the better it is for UK PLC.
There's about 15, 16,000 service leavers every year entering the workplace. And from what you've described there, there's almost a life cycle from joining the army, getting a set of values and feeling motivated to work toward with that team in the military. And then in my experience, there's three types of service leaver. There are those that were never going to do a full career, and so they do 3, 5, 12 years, whatever that may be, and they leave on their own terms. There are those then that have achieved everything they want to achieve and decide the time is right for them to leave, and they leave the service. And then there's a third type, and it's those that don't really want to leave, but they've either run out of time or they've come to an end point in their career through medical discharge or whatever it might be, who may, in some cases, bury their head in the sand. And that's a little bit of a challenge. Continuing the life cycle, there's then this resettlement period, so the shift from being in the military to being a civilian, and then there's the adjustment post-military. That's kind of that whole life cycle, and that there's varying levels of success on that. So what do you see as the biggest misconception about people leaving the armed forces having gone through that life cycle?
So Johnny Mercer used to talk about it, the mad, bad, sad rhetoric. We see the media, Gareth Williams is fantastic at holding people to account for the way soldiers are portrayed. And
sorry, Tim, can you just describe mad, bad, sad? What do you mean
so
by that?
So the mad, bad, sad rhetoric is perpetuated by predominantly military charities, I believe, to raise funds and bring in money. And it, in many instances, it's relevant to a number of small cases that they support. But because it is so much in the public eye, it's above the line advertising, then that mad, bad, sad rhetoric tends to be accorded to the vast majority of service leavers.
So mad as in got
mad,
PTSD.
PTSD, you know, sort of incredibly angry, incredibly vocal, aggressive.
Or depressed.
Or depressed. Yeah, mad, bad or sad. Or you know, just generally ruffians. And I think, you know, that's unhelpful. You know, there was a campaign, please give this little girl her daddy back. And that tends to pervade society and business owners, that if they are not, have got no lived experience or understand the talent pool, the military talent pool, it creates a barrier to them employing people from the military. So that's one of my concerns, you know, as well as the ability of the people that are leaving from that language-rich environment within the military and trying to articulate. So there are a number of barriers to gainful and sustainable and rewarding employment for people leaving.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The is something that the co-leader of the programme, Kate, and I have been from day one trying to get rid of that misconception about mad, bad and sad. And we, on our very first event with Shaping Portsmouth, showed some statistics that actually, we're less likely to be mad, less likely to be bad, and less likely to be sad than the general population. So I found that really interesting, and we found some data to support that. For those that don't know, Tim, when someone leaves the armed forces, what does a transition typically look like?
So when people come to leave, and you talked earlier, Andrew, about the there are different types of people and different situations when people come to leave. If you look at the early service leaver who perhaps become disinterested in military service and decide that, you know, that their early 20s, they've developed some skills and want to get out. Unless you've done 6 years, there's marginal provision for those that are leaving. And again, it's the uniformed individual that has access to some support around employment. There's a housing brief. There's a joint services housing advice office. There's some a brief on the financial aspects of resettlement. But the financial aspects of resettlement are very much around your gratuity, your pension, and, you know, prospectively, any claims you're going to be making for injury sustained when you've served. But it's marginal. For people that are discharged at pace, even if they've done more than 6 years, if they are discharged administratively or through injury, there's a lot more support through the injury and the medical discharge process. But for those that are administratively discharged, they're just kicked out of the door. There's very little support. Even though they might be eligible for it, they're expected to go and find that out for themselves.
Why might somebody be administratively discharged for those? For
people that don't know, that service is no longer required. So it could be for a compulsory drug test failure. It could be for a misdemeanor. We what was fantastic working in this space, there was a full corporal. I can't remember his name, so I wouldn't be able to share it if I, you know, otherwise. But who'd had a couple of beers in the corporal's mess, 10 years service, exemplary service, couple of beers in the mess. And somebody asked him if he was going to be around the next day on the parade, realised his car was still parked on the parade square and had to go and move it. So went out, moved it, literally drove it 100 yards, got picked up by the RP sergeant. You've had a drink, right? And as happens within the military, got warned for orders, went in front of the CO, expecting for a substantial fine and a slap wrist, and was discharged. He went home, said to his missus, "Can't believe it, they're kicking me out." So she said, "Okay, I want a divorce." And he said, "What?" She said, "I want to be married to a soldier, and you're not a soldier anymore." So in a very short expanse of time, you know, 2 to 4 hours, he'd lost his job, lost his career, lost his wife, had his kids removed, was going to be losing the quarter, and really struggled. What was fantastic around that was somebody found out about it, pulled on the network of the ex-military community that all got around him. Within 2 weeks, he'd had three interviews, got a great job, went out to celebrate getting a job and met the love of his life, which was absolutely incredible. But that is something that could have been quite catastrophic for that individual who'd really enjoyed his military career up to that point. So for me, the resources, there needs to be a kind of handover when people come to leave the military. So as part of the transition, when you sign up to join the military, you are committed to the mission and the team. And they are drilled into you through basic, phase two, and sustained throughout your career. When you leave, you are subliminally telling the people with whom you work, "I'm not interested in the mission. I don't really care about the team." And it might not be the case, but that's what people quite often read from it, irrespective of the way you are departing. If you're departing under a cloud, an administrative discharge, then people see you as a bit of a miscreant. But otherwise, if you are coming to the end of your service or you're going off mission and you're leaving the team, and there's a kind of fracture, it's at that point that I believe that the ex-military community really comes into its own, because there's the lived experience through the transition that can support people through those turbulent waters. And I think with that lived experience of the transition, we collectively can help people navigate and avoid the potholes that many of us found on our departure.
Yeah, it's an incredible network, isn't it? It's an incredible network. And I mentioned there's 15-ish thousand people a year that leave. So that's 15,000 people are experts in their transition into the civilian world. And I always talk about the power of the network. And pretty much everybody I work with who's leaving the services gets a job through their network, as opposed to firing it into the black hole, which is, you know, LinkedIn or an Indeed job application. So, but it's really great. You've mentioned a couple of organisations, Job Oppo and Reed. What was the other one?
Reed in Partnership.
The one with Ben Reed.
Oh, Redeployable.
Redeployable. There's the Forces Transition Group. There's the Gendit Network. All of these things really have sprung up in the last 5 or 6 years.
There have always been, you know, the likes of the list as it is now, Gunners in Business, many regiments and units and branches of the other services have those networks. And it kind of builds out. It is recognised. I think with the evolution of social media, they become more predominant and you know, people have joined. You know, you've got the likes of FRV, the Final RV Group on Facebook and multiple others.
And really, they fill the gap between what the Armed Forces contract offers and finding a place in the workplace, haven't they? They've kind of just narrowed the gap. So there's more than one way of doing things. So there's never been more, as though. There's never been more available to the service leaver.
Not at this current stage. I mean, my big concern, there was a piece of research done by the Behavioural Insights team. I think it was 2017, 2016. And it talks about behavioural insights in transition. And unlike a lot of the other bits of research, they came out with four recommendations. The first one of which was reducing the information overload when you come to transition. You are overwhelmed. You've got multiple areas of your life that you need to consider. You've got, you know, finances, you've got employment, you've got accommodation, children, education, health, well-being, community, that are all to be considered as part of your move, not just the employment piece. And, you know, for me, facilitating somebody to understand that environment, move into it and get that laid out is absolutely critical. And I think the network can very much support in that. But this overwhelm of information that people have thrown at them. When I left, I got 2.5 reams worth of paper, 90% of which was not relevant to my circumstances. But when people leave and they go, right, I'm going to go and look for another job. And one of the things that I see very often on LinkedIn is signed off, leaving in about a year, any advice, welcome. And suddenly 400 people, well-intended individuals say, go and have a look at Turner & Townsend, bounce into this, join the Gendit network, have a look at this. And again, people are overwhelmed with the amount of information and support. And very often their next post is overwhelmed by the amount of support that's on here. Sorry if I've not been in touch, but really like to connect and what have you. But again, it's that overwhelm of information that people struggle with. So I think it's critical that, you know, while there is all of that support, it can again be overwhelming to the individual. Within the US, they've got a thing called the ETS sponsorship run by a former one-star General Mike Eastman. And what they've set up in the US through ETS sponsorship is very much it's a bit of an amalgam of various things that we've got in the UK, the way Valor is looking to go, the Defence Transition Services. But VAPC are a classic example of this, that people in a local area that understand that environment and can advise and guide for people that are landing in that area. It's for me, that is incredibly supportive because it starts to personalize and reduce the information available for the individual. So as opposed to throwing as much information at them and expect them to pick it out of the, take the wheat from the chaff, if you will, what you start to personalize the information so they are accorded the information relevant to their circumstances to facilitate their making a decision that best supports them, as opposed to, you know, the lived experience of another individual that perhaps can't talk about or share because they're not in their shoes.
much of that, in my experience, Tim, is because the service leaver doesn't know what they want to do. So they try passing themselves off as 10 different things rather than triangulating on the one thing and then backing themselves. That's why there's so much information, because they're looking at all avenues.
Yeah, I mean, that's around the employment piece, yeah. You know, but then you throw that into the housing. So, you know, where do we decide where we're going to live? And we know from the research where people tend to, you know, there are four predominant areas. Their last posting, the area from which the serving person came, the area from which the spouse came, or the work environment, you know, wherever the work is. So, yeah. But because, you know, that's circumstantial and dependent upon the individual. But there's so much information out there, so much support, that it can be overwhelming as people come to that, to the decision-making process for them to land well. And, you know, while there is the rhetoric around, you know, join well, serve well, leave well, the leave well is very much down to the individual.
That's really key. It's down to the individual. When I'm in my seventh year as a veteran, as a civilian, when I was in my final year, I did something every single day because I wanted to help myself. If I was going to be a failure as a civilian, it was because I never put enough effort in. So that was my whole thing. And that is always my tip to people I work with. Okay, Tim, we're going to move on. You called me Andrew earlier. Maybe I should call you Timothy, use our Sunday names. we often hear about the challenges of transition, and we've spoken about those in depth. But let's focus on the strengths. What makes a service leaver such a valuable hire or valuable asset for an organisation in our region?
So for me, when you're in the military serving, you are reported on and assessed against three elements: your military skills, your leadership skills, and your trade skills. Your service career can take you through multiple, I know yours will have, will have taken you through different jobs, building out a phenomenally diverse skill set. For me, irrelevant of the articulation of that, somebody, as they come to leave, brings a breadth of skills. But within that, the core values, sea drills, courage, discipline, integrity, loyalty, selfless commitment. So everybody leaving the armed forces wants a mission. You give them a mission, they'll deliver on it. They are problem solvers, incredibly broad lateral thinkers around how to resolve. And that's pan service predominantly. People are able to solve problems. So give them the direction of travel and, you know, let them just get on with it. They can be trusted to deliver. I think there's somewhat of a misunderstanding around people that you've got to give them a job, let them do it. Give them another job, let them do it. And for organisations that don't have a particularly strict direction of travel, I think that can very much be the case. But you will end up with a very exhausted individual that really doesn't enjoy and doesn't get any fulfilment. So I think people leaving the armed forces come with a diverse skill set that you can give them a direction of travel and they will go and deliver on it. My personal belief is that while we've got the fantastic organisations like BAE, Babcock's, massive organisations, Barclays, JP Morgan, lots of big industry players that have got fantastic, well-designed, well-thought-out, supportive veteran employment programmes, ex-forces employment programmes for both uniformed and the armed forces community with the remote working capability that really get behind it. I think somebody leaving the armed forces, joining a small to medium enterprise, can go in for a particular role, but then build that role out within. And I'll cite a particular example, a guy that I supported leaving the Royal Corps. He was a Lance Corporal. And he'd got a kind of salary range that he was looking at. And so I mentored him through the process. He went for a number of interviews. We'd done his CV. And he got into an organization. And this is one of the junior ranks within the Royal Corps. You know, and I'm not picking out the Royal Signals purely because, you know, that was my core. I believe this across all three services, and everybody delivers this. But he went into a small organization, started delivering value. After 6 months, got a 20% pay increase, just because they'd got him on probation for that first period. Within a year, he'd had another 30% increase on his salary, which are just absolutely phenomenal that he'd been. But he then messaged me and said he's been groomed for director position because he brought so much to that organisation. And that's where I think people, you know, he's incredibly fulfilled in that role. He's not gone into a monolithic organisation. I run people through Moresby when they, you know, if they are unsure, as you suggested earlier on, Andy, that, you know, they're not sure what they bring and what direction they need to go in. So I put them through Moresby, which is a fantastic second career choice platform, which I really like. There are others out there. But what that does is it holds up a mirror to the individual, but gives them career direction that says, right, you know, these are the kind of jobs that you're able to do. And for me, if that can give somebody a sense of direction, get the head into two or three spaces, and then find the organization that suits them best, fantastic. But one of those elements is where they sit within an organizational structure. And it's kind of two axes. One is follower to leader, and the other one, small organization to large organization. And those that sit with as a leader in a smaller organization, that's called the an entrepreneur quadrant. And by far and away, and I'd say in excess of 90% of people that I put through that, sit in the entrepreneur quadrant. My self-analysis, the analysis I've done around that is that within the military, you work within discrete units and subunits. So for me, as a Lance Corporal 2IC section or a Corporal section commander, you are already managing and making decisions that you can see the output of those decisions that you make and the instructions that you provide for those subordinates to you. Even up to full colonel, half colonel. Within that command structure, you are working with discrete units. And for me, people that leave the military, if they make a decision, set a strategy, set a direction of travel, and they start to see that come through and the benefit of that, that really validates them and delivers them the fulfillment within the employment. And that's why we've got, you know, so many service leavers being entrepreneurs. You know, for me, it's people that are living, you know, whether it's a small one-man band delivering consultancy and having a portfolio career with a number of customers, or people that are setting up a small business with a view to scaling and building out. So many entrepreneurs are, you know, from the ex-forces community because they've been given the skill set. And you know, that they get behind the mission that they set for themselves.
Yeah, that was really good. Just for any listeners that aren't familiar with with the rank structure, Lance Corporal is a junior rank. It's the first rank that people are promoted to as soldiers, and a lieutenant colonel or a colonel, referenced as a half or a full colonel by Tim, is a senior officer. And, you know, there's a whole plethora of ranks that sit between the two. We talk quite a lot, Tim, about transferable skills and the transferable skills that the service leaver or the veteran has. It's a term that I don't particularly like because it almost means that you can't do anything else. And in my very first interview when I was leaving the army, the guy didn't really want to interview me. And the first question he asked me was, "You're probably really good at killing people, Andy, but what do you know about the water industry?" I got the job, which is unbelievable, because with that being the first question. So just on that point of transferable skills, what are those transferable skills in the civilian that are transferred into the civilian workplace?
Well, we've talked about some of those, haven't we? For me, you know, the problem solving, task mission orientation. That task orientation covers over two things. First of all, understanding the mission and the purpose of the organisation, but equally working those extra hours to be prepared to get it done. I know when I first left, if I had something to do that day, I'd get it done. The organisation that I joined, it was like the Le Mans start. At 5 o'clock, as soon as that big hand hit 12, bang, people were out the door. And it was like a sprint. And I'd sit in my office and look at them queuing up to get onto the dual carriageway. I'd leave, you know, half an hour later, head to the gym. And it was very much about delivering on what you've got to do that day and fulfilling on the mission. I think people generally bring that to the workplace, going the extra mile and focusing on the delivery of the purpose and the mission. For me, it is imbibed within the British military, and I've had a number of discussions on what actual order this is, but it's adapt, improvise, overcome. And the ability for people to think laterally on how they do it is just, I mean, there's a fantastic story. The leadership skills as well that people have developed through, you know, John Adair's theory of leadership, task, team and individual. And there was a great story of that they'd run a leadership course, and they'd got a number of people from this big organization, a whole number of teams to go and do it. And there were a bunch of veterans that got together to do it. And the course was run by, I think it was Marines or one of the regiments. And one of it was getting a 3/4-ton Land Rover trailer out of a ditch. And there were a number of pieces of scaffolding and the locks for the scaffolding and the pulleys and what have you. And a lot of the engineers from the organization sat around, did the design to build an A-frame, lock it together, and then, you know, the mechanical advantage of pulling this. The veteran group turned up and looked at the piles, and they all just got behind it and just went, "Let's just shove it out." And none of the other equipment was used. They just used, you know, Mark One individual to push the trailer out. And I think that for me, this ability to adapt, improvise, overcome is phenomenal. You know, the thinking outside the box and delivering. Commitment to task, you know, you give somebody a purpose and a mission. And that's why you find so many people leaving the armed forces will go into police, fire, ambulance or the NHS, because there's a clear, defined mission. You know, people become veteran entrepreneurs because they believe in the mission. So I think if there's a clear mission within an organization, you know, you will naturally attract people from the armed forces.
Brilliant. I knew they were going to pick that trailer up and drag it out. Tim, as you know, I work as an independent consultant. A lot of the work I do is on developing leadership skills, because in the armed forces, leadership is a core competency. It's the core business. Now, if a company is a facilities company, their core business is facilities. If a business is a cleaning company, the core the core business is cleaning. In the military, leadership, you mentioned at the beginning, serve to lead in the army, and I'm sure the Navy and the Royal Air Force have got their own mottos from their respective officer schools. It's core business. So when you think about, we've spoken about some of the transferable skills there, but in terms of leadership, what do service leavers bring to the workplace? Can I just add a caveat there? Because some listeners may be thinking, "Oh, great, we don't want the sergeant major cutting around shouting at people being transactional."
that was going to be my next point, Andy. There was a fantastic campaign, Troops to Teachers, and the kickback, again, from this misunderstanding of the military community was, you know, I don't want somebody barking orders at my kids. I think things have changed massively. The leadership skills that people bring to the civilian workforce are phenomenal. You know, within the Corps, we talked about network-centric warfare and the two-tape general, people being able to make decisions at lower levels. If you peel that back, unpack it fully, you can identify that you might have a young serving soldier, airman or sailor that might just be 18 or 19 years old, has developed some rank and is in charge of some individuals because they've proven their leadership skills. And leadership is about getting people to follow you. It's not about pushing people along. And for me, that those leadership skills, irrespective of the work environment or the market, it's about the ability of service leavers to understand what the mission is, articulate that mission to the people with whom they work, and build a team to take them forward. And delivering on expectations. It's not about barking orders and sending people in a direction. It's leadership, and servant leadership is understanding the capability of the individuals within the team, recognizing that they are whole life people. You know, they've got issues at home, they've got family issues, they've got financial issues possibly. Understanding that and being able to work through the team task and individual scenarios to understand how best to still deliver on that mission, I think is the way people are developed and the value that people bring to the workplace, as well as that ability to think outside the box. But as part of the leadership as well, irrespective of what people that have served, and we can all name individuals that don't, but it's recognizing that the buck stops with you, and you know, the responsibility for delivering on that and managing it, I think is an element that all people, all service leavers bring to the workspace.
So I think what I heard there was, in terms of leadership, those that have had a career in the military have multiple leadership styles. They're empathetic leaders, they're servant leaders, and they can make the right decisions at the right time.
I believe so. I think, you know, making a decision with the information available, one of the things that was instilled in me throughout my career, it's more important to make a decision than make the absolutely right decision. It's very easy to recognize with 20/20 full vision hindsight whether a decision was right based on the information that's now available. But making a decision at the time is more important than dithering around and waiting until you've got all the information, because that you don't know when that information is going to be coming along. And I think one of the strengths that people leaving the armed forces have is the ability to make decisions, stand by it, justify it, you know, react. If it turns out to not be the right decision, take full ownership and redirect.
Amazing. Thank you. I've got one last question for you, Tim, and really I'd like you to speak to business owners, hiring managers, recruiters in our region. Why should they be actively seeking to employ those leaving the military and veterans more generally?
There's a thing within the military that it's force multiplier. People leaving the armed forces come with a whole set of skills, many of which they won't be able to tell you about and articulate to you. But you will find out if you give them the opportunity to demonstrate their capability, give them a mission. The number of employers that I've spoken to, particularly of small to medium enterprises, startups and scaling businesses, that said, yeah, I recruited this guy to do this job, But, you know, over the first 6 months, he took over this job and this job as well and delivered on it. And I think for me, you give somebody the room to be able to deliver and you will be surprised at just what they are able to achieve. And that's, you know, people that have done 3-4 years plus that have left, give the early service leavers, give them the responsibility because they will bloom and develop into the role. Push them. Don't stick them in a menial task job, or if it is a menial task, give them the opportunity to demonstrate the capability that they have and allow them to expand, because I promise you, you will be surprised.
I love that. You will be surprised. And you're absolutely right. if a business owner, a hiring manager, a recruiter wants to learn more, how can they get hold of you?
My email address at Shaping Portsmouth is tim.jones@shapingportsmouth.co.uk. Please feel free to reach out if you've got any questions. And when I respond, I'll share my mobile number if you wanted to talk. Quite happy to talk about various pathways that you're able to access the service leaver environment, and we'll raise notice that we're talking about an event over at the Portsmouth Distillery. Thanks very much to Vince for allowing that on the 19th of November this year, but happy to have conversations with people in the interim.
And service leavers who are Portsmouth-based or are looking to move back to Portsmouth, do they contact you on the same email?
Yep, quite happy to receive emails from anybody that people looking for support from family members that are looking to move to the Portsmouth area, and we can put them in touch with some great employers within the Portsmouth area that are looking to recruit from the Armed Forces Military Talent Pool, and that includes families as well.
Tim, it's been an absolute pleasure. Your passion for the service leaver, for giving to other people, is it's plain to see. The enthusiasm that you talk about service leavers and their transferable skills is amazing. I've really enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.